Are you going to make any sort of official response or interview, or are you going to kind of let it go?
I think you just heard it. I think you're breaking news here on Hacker and the Fed.
Breaking news.
That's always been my tip if you want to tell if your spouse is having an affair. There's three things. Second phone, large weight loss, and new underwear.
Hector Monsegur was responsible for some of the most notorious hacks ever committed.
FBI Special Agent Chris Tarbell.
Hacker turned FBI informant.
Participated in some of the world's most infamous hacks.
That caused up to $50 million in damages.
A life in the shadows.
Cyber attacks on the rise.
Welcome to Hacker in the Fed. I'm Chris Tarbell, former FBI Special Agent, working my entire career in cybercrime. I'm joined, as always, by my friend and podcast co-host, Hector Monsegur. Hector is a former black hat hacker who once faced 125 years in prison for his many years of hacking under the code name Sabu. Our stories collide in June 2011 when I arrested him and then convinced him to work with me at the FBI. Hector's a red teamer, researcher, and cybersecurity expert. Hector, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing great, full of energy, pretty excited, ready to go.
You are back from vacation. We have to tell the audience we're a little bit sorry for missing some shows. Sure. Hector decided to go on vacation in a place that doesn't have the internet. Can you imagine? The world's greatest hacker, and there's no internet around.
Well, I have to say, Chris, I needed that. I needed to disconnect. I had to get away. It originally was supposed to be like a two-week vacation-ish. And then I was like, hey, I'm already here. Might as well stay. What's the worst thing that could happen? So
yeah, you can't fool me. You flew your whole team in and you got to party down there. You were doing work down there. It wasn't all vacation.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a lot of work, a lot of research, reconnaissance, information gathering, and then, of course, connecting the dots. So the first couple of weeks was vacation, I promise. The last few weeks, I was like, all right, cool. I got to get things done when I'm out here.
Did you relax?
Oh, I loved it, man. I was in the rainforest, brother. I was in the rainforest. Get this. Let me visualize this to you, for you. So I would wake up 4 or 5 in the morning. The sun is about to come up. And then, boom, it just starts raining. Really nice, beautiful, clean, cold rain. I would make some coffee. I would sit outside and just watch the rain come down and just enjoy the ambiance of just being out in the woods. It was beautiful.
That does sound nice. I'm quite jealous of that. I didn't get to do any of that stuff.
Well, you should have came with me. See, that's your problem. You're still behind.
It's true. I did. I stayed here. But I'm glad you got to some rest. I'm glad you came back with some energy. We should be able to do shows every week now. But, you know, this is no pressure. There's no pressure on us. You know, I know the audience, we get tons of emails saying, hey, I like to listen to you guys every week. But, you know, some weeks when we don't do it, it's because we are doing important things like vacationing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the one thing I'll tell you folks, especially out there, that, you know, the folks that are out there that have highly technical jobs, or you're sitting in front of your desk all day. Listen, it's a highly stressful job as it is. And the one thing I don't want for anybody, any of us, is to get burnt out. So please be self-aware and recognize when you need to time off, or just take time off. Enjoy your vacations. And this is coming from someone that hasn't had a vacation in like 8 years. So shout out to the company I work with. They're like, yeah, go ahead, dude. Do your thing. Catch you whenever I would catch you. And just make sure you do all those red team jobs when you get back. And
make sure you work through the night to catch up.
Yeah, make sure you catch up as soon as you get back, you know.
But, it is so important. The people don't realize how much stress kills your body and kills everything. And, like, you just can't stay in it. And, you know, I've worked that life where, you know, it's work, you know, and that's the only thing you focus on. And, you know, you think your career is the most important thing in your whole entire life. But, you know, I think it takes a little bit of age and you start figuring out, well, hey, man, it's not the most important thing in my life. And, no. You know, I'm not discouraging anybody from working hard, because hard work will get you somewhere. It'll get you, make life easier, make things better for you. But, you know, it's not everything. It certainly is not everything.
No, especially when you have a family. You know, time is precious, and you want to make sure you spend that time with them. You create memories. You know, we went to the beach. We had a great time. We got to meet some friends. In fact, I'll give you guys a good hacker fun fact. So there was a group like 30 years ago that I was part of. It was called Pure Elite. And Pure Elite was kind of like, you know, quote-unquote hacker group from back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And we had a really awesome cast of folks, a lot of guys that were very talented, smart. Some of those folks are very successful in life today. And even during like my case and even during the mistakes I made with like Anonymous and all that, they were around. They were watching, right? Call them the watchers. Well, anyways, two other members got together for the first time in 30 years. We hung out together at the beach and enjoyed some nice cold beers and just reminisced about the old times. So that was a big one for me and my squad. I have to still meet some other guys. I have some guys in the Middle East I have to go see. Have one guy in India I have to go see. But yeah, one guy flew in from Hungary and the other guy came in from one of the islands and we just linked up.
Good. That sounds fantastic.
It's very cool.
I got to stop asking about your vacations because I just get more and more jealous. We missed some really big stories, Hector, in cybersecurity. Did you keep track of anything? Did you see what was going on in cybersecurity in your world, or were you totally disconnected?
Well, I disconnected for a couple of weeks, and then the remaining weeks, I guess the more recent weeks, I have been catching up. And you are absolutely right. A lot of things that happened during, especially the transition from the previous president to the next one. A lot of things have happened over the last few weeks. And I think one of those you might be interested in talking about today. Curious case, but yeah, big news.
Yeah, so they pardoned Ross Ulbricht. The guy who's I arrested and was convicted for running Silk Road. I've gotten a lot of inquiries. We have a lot of listeners reach out to us, kind of know what our take is on that. A lot of media requests to jump on. I didn't do any of the media. Really, my thoughts on this one, and I think I would be a huge hypocrite if I didn't have this opinion. And maybe this surprises people, maybe it doesn't, but it shouldn't. This should not be a hot take for anyone. Second chances. I hope Ross does something great with his life. He's been given a second chance. I mean, one of my closest, bestest friends also got arrested and now has a second chance and is doing great things with his life, doing great things for his family. He is trying to teach the younger generation of hackers to not get into hacking. He is trying to, preach his mistakes, and he was given a second chance. And so, just like that friend. And then over the last couple of weeks, it came out that there was another guy I worked with, a guy named Chris Wade, who is a great friend of mine. He had been arrested. I worked with him. A lot of articles coming out. Our story had never been made public, but Chris Wade's, his stuff's out there if you guys want to duck go it or take a look and see what's going on in it. That's another guy I worked with in the same respect. And Chris, he's done great things with his second chance. So, sure. I hope Ross does great things with his second chance. I really honestly do. I don't know. I don't know why that would be newsworthy. I don't know why people care so much. I don't know why people couldn't just figure that out. I'm a big second chance guy, but the pressure's on Ross. I mean, hopefully he, can do something, great with this opportunity he's been given.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been given a second chance and I've been very grateful for everyone involved, you included. And so naturally I'm definitely open to second chances. It's weird because I felt for many years here in this country, in the United States, that folks were anti-second chances. It felt that way. It felt like a lot of people were like, oh, well, this guy's a criminal. He's always going to be a criminal. And sometimes even in business, when I meet folks, they're like, oh, you're that guy. Well, unfortunately, we cannot hire you for this contract because of X, Y, and Z, liability, legal issues, or legal concerns even. So it's not easy coming back from that space, from that environment, from a conviction, and giving giving life a legitimate run is always a complication with that. But I agree. Like, big shout out to the situation and big shout out to that person. I hope that they have been able to turn their life around and enjoy their life. Looking at a double life for 40 years is pretty scary. Being stuck in a box all day as someone that was stuck in a box all day, like, that's not fun whatsoever. But I do have some questions for you, Chris, because I did, as your friend, as someone that follows the news and all that, I did see some opinions that were kind of flowing around there. I want to get your perspective on it, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So I understand Ross getting the second chance, getting the pardon. I understand that, you know, that came from a lot of support from like the libertarian space and all that. Okay, whatever. And then, of course, I know his mom is super happy. But I almost felt like maybe not you directly, but maybe your team or maybe the FBI in general were slighted during the pardon. Because some of the messaging was, yes, we're going to pardon Ross, et cetera, et cetera. Because we feel that maybe law enforcement were too extreme in the case, or they were biased, or I forgot exactly the language that I saw. I'm sure you saw some of it. What's your take on that? Do you have any opinions on you know what you saw commentary wise?
I mean, I saw what the president had had put out on X, which was a little disheartening. But I mean, I don't take it personally. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was directed at me. I mean, I, you know, he said these were the people going after him. I never investigated the president. I never, you know, I'd investigated cybercrime. I think he was more talking directly about Southern District of New York in that. But I also, you know, we all know this. It's not unexpected, you know, in Trump's first term, you know, he didn't necessarily speak with that presidential tone that we had, you know, historically have seen from presidents. So, sure. You know, it's not unexpected. Was it upsetting when I first saw it? Sure, but, you know, I didn't take it personally.
Yeah, see, when I first read it, I'm like, who the hell are they talking about? Because I know your character, I know you as a person, and I knew you as a professional, as a professional law enforcement officer. I could not attribute or can make the connection from what I was reading connected back to you. So I figured as much. I figured maybe it was a reference to the prosecutors.
I think it was more the office, more the like
the office,
Pre-Grahar, the people, the actual, you know, United States Attorney.
Of that guy. I remember when he went he did a press release and said he personally had arrested Hector Monsiger, and I'm like, who the hell is this guy? I never met him in my life, you know. yeah, I think that makes a lot more sense, and I think the audience kind of gets that, you know. Yeah, I mean, look, that's a hell of a story. Now, you said you've had a lot of media kind of reach out to you. Are you going to make any sort of official response or interview, or are you going to kind of let it go?
I think you just heard it. I think you're breaking news here on Hacker and the Fed.
Breaking news. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You know, so yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, I can, you know, move on to obscurity and not have to do stuff like that, and just, you know, chat with you every week and run my food pantry and do that. So, because that's right now what's bringing me the most joy in my life. My family too.
Of course, your family's beautiful.
We served 96 families today. 96 different families were fed at the food pantry today. So,
isn't that amazing? Like that's so fantastic to me, bro.
89 last night. So, you know, we are the largest food pantry in our state, and serving over 2 million pounds of food every year, given out to the public, and 150 volunteers. I have 150 volunteers I organize.
Well, I wonder. So now you got me curious. This is a cybersecurity podcast, or security podcast in general. Mm-hmm. So from like a logistics point of view, have you ever looked at how you guys are getting food, or maybe the distributors, and saying, wait, these guys could probably abuse the system. Have you ever found anything like that?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, sure, I figured. Sure. There's a lot of you know, ability for abuse, because it's, you know, a very non-security based type thing. You know, it's a very generous society. And so there are easy ways to abuse it. Do things need to be tightened? Yeah, things need to be tightened a little bit, you know, but I also have to have a little bit more perspective. You know, you and I go a little bit crazy when it comes to security. I would get worried if something was like being stolen, but then come find out it's being stolen in order to be given to a church. So, you know, there's circumstances around everything. It's good. I've been looking for something in my life like this to sort of give back. And so running the food pantry has certainly been rewarding.
It's such a blessing. And I know a lot of people that go there are very appreciative of you. And, you know, the cool thing is that, like, you know, if you believe in karma, like, I think you're generating a ton of karma points. The indirect, you know, that's not your purpose. Your point is just to be there and help. But I've known of other good things that you've done anonymously. You've helped a lot of people. So I think, you know, this is why I have a lot of respect for you as well. You've since I've known you, you've been very helpful. I'm about to expose you on something. There was something you did. Yeah. When I got arrested, and remember the girls were, they were moving around.
Sure.
You know, you and your wife got together and you know, dropped off some toys or whatever, some donated toys. Like that meant a lot. Those are two little girls.
We got Christmas presents. Those little girls shouldn't go without Christmas because you and I were going through some shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Those girls remember even to this day. And, you know, even going back then, I want the audience to kind of understand the perspective here. Even going back then, you were helpful. You know, you're always willing to help and be there as a good person. I appreciate that.
Well, I thank you for those kind words. I would, you know, looking back at myself, I wouldn't have seen myself that way.
Really?
I think I'm a sweetheart on the inside, and I don't even know it. I tried to be this rough and tough guy on the outside, but you know, he gets right down to it. You know, kids and people that need help. Even someone that's in pain on this, like I don't know a stranger. I somehow have this drive that wants me to help that person.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I first got in law enforcement, I don't think that was the way it is. But
no, and this is why. This is why I've always, you know, I've appreciated our friendship and our relationship, because you got to remember, prior to you, the only experience I ever had with law enforcement was stop and frisk 4 times a day, which sucked, right? Mm. And aside from the stop and frisk 4 times a day for how many years, X amount of years, it was then, you know, the whole Giuliani era, my family going to prison. As a kid, I didn't realize that my family were in the wrong, you know? As a kid, I was like, wow, these people are just targeting my family. So that was a perspective I had for a very long time. Now that I'm older and wiser and I get, you know, circumstances and variables and all that, I get that that things were just what they were supposed to be. But then meeting you was definitely an eye-opener for me. What it made me realize is that you guys are just human beings. You're doing your job. Sometimes it's a shitty job. And I'm part of my cursing there, but it's not an easy job, because you're constantly having to make these judgment calls that sometimes could change someone's life, you know?
Yeah, and you have to make that call on the line. Or, you know, now street cops making that call more often. You know, they're you know, sure, interacting with people, and whether, you know, to give a, you know, you can look in someone's car and know they can't afford to pay a ticket. It would absolutely ruin their life if you give them a ticket and then you let them go with a warning. But, you know, I think that's where it sort of loses between, you know, in the FBI sense, from FBI world into a prosecutor. And then the prosecutors become more robotic. You know, they don't have to see the face of what you're doing to the person. They're just there with all the facts on a piece of paper. This is what the person did. This is what the law is. And let's apply those two things. Whereas, you know, an FBI agent has to actually sit there with the person.
Well, I tell you again, I've been very blessed. Aside from knowing you, you know, also I had the fortune of having that one prosecutor. I know he's private now, so I'm not going to mention his name. But I got to say, man, like, meeting you guys have been fantastic. I know a lot of people don't have that luxury. I've heard some horror stories, man.
So, I've seen horror stories, dude. Yeah. It really is a crapshoot of who you get. So, yeah, you hopefully, if you're ever doing something, hopefully you get investigated by someone that's got a heart.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%. But aside from all that good stuff, and you know, I think this is a great, you know, this is a great segue from all that good stuff. Cybersecurity has been getting black eyes. The industry's been getting punched in the face recently. Some new vulnerabilities. You guys, I'm sure you've been kind of hearing from the news. A lot of exploits. There was this 2022 leak that happened from FortiGates. They called it the 40 leaks. That was a big one.
Huge.
That was huge. Yeah. And just to think that, I mean, there were tens of thousands of victims, compromised firewalls and VPNs and all sorts of stuff that happened.
I mean, these are big industry firewalls. We're talking about, you know, protecting lots of stuff behind it.
Oh, yeah. And I was looking at some of the victims, man. These are massive corporations, government agencies, organizations of all sorts. Even down to mom and pop little coffee shops down the block that, you know, they had enough money to purchase a next generation firewall, and they got popped, you know. Crazy times. I feel like it keeps going. You know, you would think after a certain period of time, maybe the exploits or vulnerabilities would slow down. It doesn't seem to be happening, Chris.
you know, I get a lot of cybersecurity news feed stuff. Yeah. And it's constant. I mean, it is constantly something different. Like if you miss one, it's just, you know, the next day you're just avalanche on you of new exploits that are coming out, you know, between, you know, Treasury Department putting OFAC sanctions on those North Korean IT workers we talked about.
Ooh.
You know, VPN vulnerabilities. We saw that. PayPal had a $2 million settlement for a data breach. Tunneling protocols were exploited. Critical vulnerability in Sonic Wall secure mobile access. Like, Hector, it just keeps happening. It just keeps going. It's like this podcast is going to go forever.
Wait, hey, listen, I'm not complaining. We could do this forever, you know. But my concern, and I had a really good conversation when I was on vacation, and I told you I ran into a couple agents, Homeland Security guys.
Yeah.
And
great organization.
Yeah, fantastic group of people, and they seem like they very much care about cybersecurity. At least the guys I met, right?
There is a lot of HSI guys that listen to this podcast. I can tell you that for a fact. They reach out all the time.
Well, shout out to the HSI homies. I spoke to two of you guys last week. And you know what's crazy? It was a random chance meeting. They recognized me, and we kind of sat down for coffee. That's pretty much all it was. But you know what? They came at me was like, hey, Hector, you know what? We have concerns, man. There's a lot of hospitals in our area getting compromised. And by the time that we find out that the hospital has been compromised, it's already too late. You know, and so I am glad. First of all, I'm glad the conversation went that way. It wasn't like, hey, we got you on something from like 20 years ago, you know, joking around here. But the fact that, you know, these guys, they could have talked about anything. They could have talked about, you know, you. They could ask me about, hey, how's Chris? I would love to know about Chris. It was like, hey, we got this hospital problem. A lot of hospitals getting hit. By the time we find out about the hospitals, already too late. And, you know, depending on the size of the hospital, now they're, and how well deeply they're connected to the government, like that's critical infrastructure, especially if they're doing work for like the government. Or they're taking care of military soldiers, vets, whatever. Yeah, it's a tough one. And it's a shame. And I know you and I have spoken about this before, where at least in the olden times, we're talking about 80s, 90s, early 2000s, hackers would purposely avoid hospitals, purposely avoid like government, right? But now it's like, you know, no holds barred. Anything is possible. Whoever's paying, you know, let's go with it. And yeah, it's definitely a tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you were hot shit in hackers world, you know, there mm-hmm. was a code of conduct. There were, yeah. you know, rules that you guys didn't break. And, you know, and that was sort of, it was more, much more individualized back then. And you guys kind of, you know, so you didn't have to, you know, you played by your own rules. That there was a culture that you guys sort of kept to yourself, you know. And then, you know, Anonymous got together. You started grouping up a little bit. Mm-hmm. You gave some guys some skill sets by teaching them how to do things and mm-hmm. do things in the bad way. And then, boom, cryptocurrency happens. And now we're, you know, it guys are able to make some money off this hacking. It's a little bit easier than, you know, moving plastic or, you know, doing stuff like that. So, you know, now you got guys that can easily get paid through ransomware, through Hacks for Hire, whatever they're doing. And rules began. There are people out there that don't give a shit about your rules, about your code of ethics. They're going to get paid.
Yeah. And they are getting paid. That's the problem right there. Yeah. You know, when I was on vacation, there was an ISP that got hit. And I spoke with the team. They gave me a call. We were talking about it. And, you know, at some point they were like, we didn't know how the hell they got in. Like, there's like no evidence anywhere that anyone got into this network.
Insider.
And then of course, huh?
Insider.
Could be an insider. Insider threat. There you go. Maybe 2025 is the year. But yeah, man, it's pretty bizarre. Well, you know what? That's not a bad point. Think about it, right? You just mentioned that Charlotte or North Carolina IT North Korea story. That was an interesting one, right?
Yeah.
You know, imagine you're hiring for a remote employee and they have a nice North Korean IP address and not North Korean IP address, North Carolina Verizon IP address, and you're hiring them. You're feeling confident. Their language is pretty good. Even the accent's pretty good. And all of a sudden you have these North Korean military or soldier guys in your network just kind of rummaging around. It's pretty bizarre. That's the age we're in, brother. It gets pretty scary as we kind of move forward. But what's cool about something like this, little platform that we have here, right? You and I could talk from two different perspectives, give our perspectives on you know, what it is that we're seeing out there. And I'm hopeful that at least even 1% of the people listening could have some good takeaways from this. That's my goal. Yeah.
Well, let's give them some takeaways. Let's get into a couple of stories. So you sent me over an article, The Protester's Guide to Smartphone Security. And so the article was all about, if you're going to go out and protest, how do you keep yourself from being tracked down? And I think this is a little bit of the anarchist side of you, maybe the libertarian side of you wants to get that message out. But you're reading it, it's not just for protests. It has good cybersecurity practices that, you know, you and I do in our daily lives because we're freaking paranoid. But you know, we still, you know, some good takeaways, you know, in fact, the first one, you know, is if you don't need your phone, leave your phone.
That's exactly right. If you're about to go and grab a burger from McDonald's, unless it's an emergency or whatever it is, or even if you're traveling abroad, you know, if you're able to leave your phone in a locked drawer or somewhere safe, secure, you should probably just leave your phone, especially if it has your entire life inside of it.
I know people that get anxiety leaving their phone to go take a shit. They wouldn't know what to do. They don't know what to do with themselves. You think that's they're going to go to McDonald's without their phone?
Well, that's the thing, though, right? It's all about attack surface. If you're outside, right, an adversary is looking at you, maybe a bad guy wants to rob you, maybe a guy that, you know, maybe a special agent, an agent of some sorts, and they're sizing you up and looking at you like, okay, cool. This guy's probably big. I don't know if I want to fight him. But maybe I can knock him down and grab his phone and run away. Maybe crack the pin, figure it out. You know, but if you leave your phone behind, if you're not using it, if you do not require it, then at least you could defend yourself and, you know, you minimize that threat.
You don't need to crack the pin if you steal it while it's unlocked. You always see people walking down the street on the phone. Somebody drives by on a motorcycle and grabs it right out of their hands.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of videos of that, actually. That's pretty insane.
I see it all the time. But, oh, by the way, when I said I know people, it was me. It's me.
Fun times.
So use a secondary device. Consider using a burner phone. Now, this is where we get a little over the top. So, you know, I think most Hacker in the Fed listeners aren't using burner phones, you know, unless they're having an affair.
Sure.
So people love to have a nice secondary phone. That's always been my tip if you want to tell if your spouse is having an affair.
Yeah.
A second phone. There's three things. Second phone, large weight loss, and new underwear. If you find one, then it's maybe. If you find a combination of those, one of them, then yeah, you might want to get a PI.
Yeah, in the industry, we consider those indicators of compromise.
Correct. IOCs, yeah, right? Your marriage has been compromised.
Some new underwear, some weight loss, a nice toupee. You know,
you've been married 25 years. Your underwear's got holes in it. You don't give a shit.
That is so true. But, you know, the burner phone thing, yeah, it's a bit much. I would recommend it if you're traveling abroad, especially to a country that's not necessarily considered safe. Worst case scenario, they steal a $50 phone from you, and that's it. You have your life. You can walk home safely, back to your hotel, whatever, Airbnb. But, yeah, I would agree. I also recommend, and Chris, you and I have talked about this. When we spoken about, like, executives that have to travel, I've said, hey, you know, you should probably leave your main laptop at home. You could probably just buy a Chromebook for $200. Sign into your email account. You could use that. Worst case scenario, get stolen. You could always lock it from your hotel room. It is an Android after all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little less on that because there's so many, you know, ways that, you know, you have business phones and all that you can remotely wipe them. So it's not like it's gone forever. You know, if someone's going to steal your phone and throw it in a Faraday bag and you can't get it to access remote to it, then, you know, they're coming after you for something bigger than just you want to use your phone.
Yeah.
If your adversary has Faraday bags, they got you.
Which reminds me, did you hear that story? I think it was this week or last week of that CEO that was kidnapped.
No.
Yeah, there was a CEO that was kidnapped for crypto.
Like as a ransom? Or he had crypto.
Yeah, it was for ransom. David Balance, the founder of Ledger. You know Ledger?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was traveling.
That guy would have crypto, and his company would have access to crypto.
Yeah, well, he was traveling through France, and he got kidnapped. He got abducted alongside his wife.
Did he get back? Is he back all right? Is there an outcome to it yet?
Yeah, man, it was actually a crazy story. It was 6 days ago, man. It was a crazy story. They abducted him. They split him and his wife up, which is already scary as it is. It set off a crazy investigation, like real-time investigation. Over 230 officers were out there hunting for the couple. In the end, they fired. They were able to free both of them without firing a shot. It was an extremely complex case, according to the General Ghislaine Jureti, the head of elite unit specializing in hostage rescue.
One of them was tied up in the basement. The other one was lounging upstairs drinking wine.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
Split them up. Well, I don't really say why that's part of it, but
oh man, you made me choke on my drink over here. 10 people apparently were arrested as a result of that kidnapping. Isn't that crazy?
Wow, that's nuts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's why I say, man, be low key. You want to be low key rich. You want to dress poor. You don't want to look like you know who you know you got anything. Don't drive flashy cars. Don't go be running around New York City in the early morning.
Yeah, leave your Patek Philippe at home, and if you see somebody walking up to you with a Faraday bag, just immediately run.
For those that don't know what a Faraday bag is, it's a specially lined bag that it doesn't allow signals to go in and out of it. So if you put your phone into it, there's no signals to it.
Fun times.
So this one is always on there. Security devices, strong alphanumerical, no pin. I've told you, yep. I love grabbing pins. I've told you that in the past. I've grabbed pins of celebrities. I've grabbed pins of squad mates. I love snagging a pin. To me, it's just interesting to figure out what their pin is. And then I go into the deep dive of why it's their pin. And sure. So I'll social engineer him to kind of figure out what that number is, what it means. Disable biometric authentication to avoid forced access. Mm-hmm. Do you do that on yours?
No, I mean my risk appetite is kind of low on it. My phone gets stolen, or I get kidnapped and they want to go through my phone. Fine, you can see a bunch of messages from bill collectors and customers that are waiting for reports. Worst case scenario, you know.
Do you go use incognito? Like your search history is not? We're not worried about it.
Well, it depends. It depends on the mood. Depends on where I am mentally at the moment. You know?
I got you. Yeah, no, that should be most people's prized possession as their search history.
Well, think about it like this. I mean, we're depending on a multinational, multi-billion-dollar business to, you know, not log our requests through the incognito mode.
Yeah.
The likelihood of that not being a thing or that being respected is pretty low, so I'm like, it's whatever.
I think you should also, though, be judged on how long you're on that link. Sometimes you click the wrong link, and you didn't mean to click that link, and that's not the video you're looking for.
Ah, yes. You know what? I agree with that one. I've had some mishaps before.
misclick.
I had a misclick. Clicked on the wrong thing by accident. It happens. That's how I got arrested.
That is true. You did click on a bad link. Keep your device updated. Come on, guys. We shouldn't have to keep reminding you. Update that thing. There's a reason the security patches come out. You know, if there's a vulnerability like an Apple, they're pretty quick to put something out to fix the iPhone if they can. Disable location services. I don't do that. My location services are on. Again, if you have a spouse and all of a sudden they disable their location services.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Disable the airdrop. I do that. I would never accept an airdrop or anything like that.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
And disable 2G network access. So 2G can get popped pretty easy. Pretty easy to break that. So don't let your phone make a 2G connection.
No, in fact, did you see that article I sent you before? There's like over 100 vulnerabilities in the different mobile 5G and other various networks. Really great white paper on that story. Yeah, it's a lot of vulnerabilities with like core networking or core cellular technologies.
Yeah.
So disable the ones you don't use, like 2G.
And then they get into communications. They say use Signal. I use Signal. I'll give up that.
Oh yeah,
I like it. This is a one. Prepare for potential service disruptions by bringing power banks. I always have extra power with me. But then write down key contacts. I couldn't call anybody if my phone. I don't know my kids' phone numbers.
That's not good.
Yeah. There's no way I could get hold of you.
Remember back in the days before smartphones, we would have numbers like stored in our head. Like I remember like my old numbers from back in the days. I could call my grandmother, you know.
I remember my friend's phone numbers when I was a kid.
Yeah.
David Hairholzer, I could tell you his phone number right off. Frank Pucci's phone number. Ryan Scobie's, all of them. I can tell you what their phone numbers are. I can't tell you my own children's phone number. And I haven't called any of those three guys in 30 years. One's dead.
No way. Oh,
yeah,
man.
My buddy from high school died.
Yeah.
Loved that guy. I lived with him for a while.
No way. How was that?
Yeah. How was him dying? Sucks.
No, not him dying, bro. Just living with him. How was that whole experience?
It was good. We lived it with together through college, and then he got involved in some things, and
yeah,
we kind of parted ways a little bit, and then he passed away, and well, that really sucks. I think about him almost every day.
Wow, no way.
Yeah, one of those things, you've had to have in your life a buddy die.
Yeah, I've had buddies just disappear. I sit around sometimes. I don't think about him. Like, where's my boy Alex at? How's he doing today? How's Daryl?
Like, disappear out of your life or disappear? Disappear?
No, just disappeared in general. Like, one day they're there, the next day I haven't seen them. They're probably in prison or dead. Who knows?
Are these online friends?
No. These are friends that I grew up with. Yeah, this one guy, Daryl.
They call that IRL, the kids.
IRL. Oh, the IRL. Yeah, yeah. I do have some IRL friends, folks. Just a heads up. But my buddy Daryl, man, he was so cool. I grew up with him. We used to go to PS15 together over there in the Lower East Side.
Why don't you give away exactly where you live?
When? Right now?
I'm kidding. Give out your address.
Oh, yeah. But all jokes aside, man, that was it was such a cool childhood, and I had a great time with him. But then it's like his life instantly overnight just went under, man. Like, his mother was arrested. His little brother died. He was homeless. He got taken to a home. I lost contact with him. We reconnected like right before you and I met. And we just reconnected right before then. And even though I hadn't seen him in like 10 years, he was like the same dude, man. I was like, yo, bro, it's so good to see you. And I said my goodbyes, and then boom, here we are. You enjoy, you really appreciate those friends, those guys that grew up with you. And then it's like, sometimes you just kind of move on.
Who's your oldest friend? Not by name, but like I got a buddy, my buddy Mike. We have been friends. We met on the bus going to second grade, and we have been friends ever since.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm old.
One of my oldest friends is the one of the three guys that we met that I told you that I met in the over there in the beach. Good friend Ty. I've known him since the 90s. We actually started. We were in Pure Elite together, and he was a security researcher. We've been hanging out ever since, man. And the dude is so cool.
Nice.
Yeah, man. It's so weird that he didn't grow up with me, quote unquote, during my adult years. We reconnected more recently, but he knew me as a child. He knew me as a kid. And I always ask him, like, dude, how was I when I was a kid? Was I like a little jerk? And he was like, well, you're a little extreme, But
Is that the politically correct way of saying you're an asshole?
Yeah. Exactly. It was a bit of an asshole. But this is a great article, though, because there's other points here. It's mostly about metadata, obscuring photos, taking care of your identity. All these things are cool. These are all legitimate recommendations that you and I personally have discussed on this podcast already. Like, none of this is new. But it's always good to have a reminder, folks. It's great to have an understanding that your attack surface is extremely important. Depending on your risk appetite, the more you minimize, the better. If your risk appetite is very loose, it's pretty open, then just continue as is.
Let's continue that conversation, because we had a listener write in. Again, send in your questions at hackerinthefed.com. Susan wrote in, what's the most important thing to do to decrease your attack surface? I've had a Yahoo email account as my secondary for a long time. It is the main address for a lot of my logins for business. I gather that from the recent episode on Yahoo security that I probably should get rid of it. Is that an accurate interpretation? So, again, how do we decrease our attack surface, Hector?
Well, you have to be self-aware, right? You have to look at what it is that you have with you right now. Let's start with you as a person. You as a person. You exist. You're a thing. You can walk through a door. Great. You can think aloud. Fantastic. Now, the moment you add a phone or a laptop or any sort of device to you as an individual, you're expanding your attack surface. With each email account that you create and each social media post that you make and each picture that you take, you're expanding your attack surface. It all depends on what you do with the information. If you take a bunch of pictures at work and taking selfies in front of your boss's office with his laptop turned on and his screen open, you're beyond expanding the attack surface at that point, right? So you have to be self-aware. You have to have an understanding as to what your risk appetite is. And I know I've mentioned this before. I'm going to kind of break it down for you guys. How far, with regards to risk, are you willing to accept? Right? Are you willing to accept that maybe your picture's posted online? Are you okay with, you know, being doxxed online? If you're involved in crypto, maybe you're a trader. Maybe you like to make some money trading cryptos all day. Are you fine with people knowing that you trade cryptos all day? And are you also fine with that being connected to a social media post or a social media identity or persona?
That story about the kidnapping should make you second guess that.
That's exactly right. And that's not the only kidnapping. There's been several kidnappings in Europe, right? And now it's coming here to the United States. But the point is, it's like you have to be aware as to what it is you're trying to accomplish. What are your goals? Where do you stand when it comes to your privacy? And then, of course, with everything else that you're adding to your life, including partners. If you're involving yourself with a lot of partners, you're dating a lot around, you're meeting a lot of people. The more people you add into your space, that you're further expanding your attack surface. These are all things you have to think about. It's not just technology-wise. It's also on a personal level. It doesn't mean you have to be a hermit, but if that's where your risk appetite is, then you will probably be a hermit.
Yeah, I mean, a perfect example. Just a few minutes ago, I said you and I use Signal.
Sure.
That's broadening our attack surface. Now you guys understand that on our phones, we have Signal. We use Signal. We have signals on our desktop. You could assume that. So if you can figure out an exploit to Signal or something that comes out, maybe you come after us. So like just telling the people and letting people know that you have it. You know, I never wore a wedding ring. It wasn't for security reasons. It was because I hate wearing rings. But it doesn't give off that information. If I'm dealing with a bad guy, this guy might be vulnerable because there's people that he loves. You know, I might be able to go after them. It's just release. How much information are you willing to release that someone may then use that against you?
1,000%. Yeah, you said it perfectly. So went back to Susan's question here with regards to her attack surface, and then we'll get back to the Yahoo account. So when it comes to like the attack surface, it all depends on your risk appetite, Susan, how far or how much information you're willing to let out. If you're using that same Yahoo account for all sorts of different services, third-party services, shady websites and all that, someone somewhere probably has already connected all that to you. All right, and there's probably a persona, a profile of you somewhere sitting on some advertiser's desk, okay? That's just the way it works.
It also doesn't help that a billion username and passwords for Yahoo accounts was released.
Yeah, no, they've been released and stolen and extracted and exfiltrated and traded.
Yeah.
So someone somewhere is sitting with your information on their desk, and they have a wonderful like a profile of you as an individual. If you want to tighten, I would say, your attack surface, you have to start to look at minimizing some of the information that you're putting out there. The information that's been put out there previously is a bit too late. It's out there already. But whatever information that you have now moving forward, you can start to tighten and apply controls. Whether those are like, you know, static controls or compensating controls, you can start to minimize that damage. As for Yahoo has a security team. And yes, they've been breached before, just like any other company. So if you feel uncomfortable using a Yahoo account, the one thing I'll tell you is this. It's almost the same thing as using a Gmail account or a Microsoft account. The only difference is that maybe Google and Microsoft have bigger security budgets than Yahoo now. But you're still entrusting someone else with your emails. That's kind of something you have to kind of weigh. Who do I trust more of my personal information?
Yeah, the attack surface thing here. A lot of people forget that the more and more of these sites that are getting breached, we're pretty much using our same usernames across. It's either the beginning of your email account or it's your full email account. No, 9 times out of 10, that's now your username. And you're right, people are putting together these portfolios against all these victims, and they can start seeing patterns in how you make passwords. You know, is it city names and a date? Is, you know, whatever it is, even the length of the password, you know, how long are your passwords? Because any password less than 12 digits now cracked pretty quick. Sure. If they get unlimited tries, you know, so things that you think are out, they're out of your control now. The data that you give to, you know, these sites, whether it's not even data, it's just logging into the site. That's password information. Someone's collecting it and they're going to build a portfolio to go after you with it. So It's tough to completely eliminate it. You're going to go paranoid and go crazy thinking about all of it.
I was reading like kind of like a breakdown, like security research on those little pop-ups. You know when you go to a website and it's like a accept cookie pop-up? It's like a cookie, right? It's a whole big thing now. There have been researchers that have used those pop-ups to kind of gain information on you. So now you have to be careful when you go to a website, you see a little pop-up like, damn, did this press okay so I could accept the cookies? Not only are you accepting that site's cookies, but now you're also interfacing with functionality that they've pretty much set up for you. Imagine a scenario where someone's able to do, like, they're able to kind of hide, you know, an OAuth authorization form behind that little cookie pop-up. And you go to press OK, and you're authorizing your account, giving full access to the third-party site. Like, this, everything is a risk. A risky mode, a risky move whenever you're online now or even offline. I don't know what to do. Do we go back to pen and paper and just get away from computers and technology? I'm starting to think so. I might live with you on the farm somewhere.
We're going to have to host a paper and pen security summit. Podcast.
Oh, there you go. That's not bad. That's not bad. I like that.
So, all right, Hector. Fun show. Hey, guys. Hector and I didn't talk about this, but you definitely can feel it. It was a different style show today. It was much more conversational. We got into, you know, dead friends and people we've lost and favorite cereal types or whatever we talked about. We had other stories. There was a story we were going to do about hacking into Subaru. We'll do it next time. Let us know. Reach out to us. Email us and let us know if you like this new style. I kind of liked it. Hector, I had more fun doing it this way than just regurgitating cybersecurity stuff, you know, article after article. Happy to go back and doing, you know, the nuanced, you know, security and detail stuff. But I enjoyed our conversation today. This is sort of kind of our, like, our conversation today. Today's show was much more like the pre-show talk.
Yes, it was. I felt like I was on talk radio for a minute, you know, just chopping it up, right? I felt like we
were having a phone call, and that really was the idea of the show, is just to share our normal conversations about security. Now, we were kind of guarded. We keep politics out of it. We don't talk about certain things, but, you know, I like the way the show went. It felt good today. So let us know if you liked it. Hector and I do this out of love. You know, we're not doing advertisements anymore. We're not getting paid to do this, and, you know, so... Any admiration, hey, guys, you're doing a great job. Glad you're back. You know, glad Hector got a vacation, got some time back. But like the style of the show, don't like the style of the show, reach out to us. questions@hackerinthefed.com. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. I got to be honest, if it's a shitty comment, keep it to yourself. I guess I don't really need to hear that. Do you need to hear it, Hector?
I mean, it depends on the comment. If it's really, like, sarcastic and witty, I might just print it out and put it on my wall.
Sarcastic, I'll take. I love laughing. If you can make me laugh, that'd be great. But if it's just, you know, you guys are a couple assholes, it could be yourself. Five-star reviews. That. Share us with social media. Tell your friends and your coworkers, hey, these guys talk security. They're fun to listen to. Just let us know we're doing all right. Appreciate it. I appreciate you, friend. Love all and right. respect you.
Take care, brother.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.